What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 118. Today, we're going to be continuing our conversation with Heather Shepherd. She's the author of The Sunlight Prescription. She's pretty much an expert on all the healing properties of the sun. So on part two, we go and do, or we talk about sunglasses and kind of the downside of sunglasses, how that affects our body's ability to produce melatonin. We talk about the possibilities for very white people, very pale people like me, to actually get tan if you use the sun in the correct method. So we cover topics like that. But first, the article of the week this week is revolving around vitamin D. You know, I thought I'd pull one on that since we're talking so much about that with the sun and everything. So this one's called Vitamin D Synthesis in the Entire Skin Surface of Dairy Cows Despite Hair Coverage. And you can find this paper, it's not that long, it's pretty interesting, on the website, so tntwellnessandnutrition.com. But Tom, do you want to kind of just cover the paper real quick?
Yeah, so basically, it was thought that originally, like, cows, the way that they get vitamin D is that, I guess, like, their fur, bacteria on their fur produce vitamin D, and when they, like, lick their fur, that's how they get it. I don't know, it was kind of weird what the original thought was. But basically, if a cow is in the sun, it produces vitamin D. And they tested this by covering the cow with, like, different blanket sizes. And the ones that didn't have any blankets on them at all when they were in sunlight produced the most vitamin D. The ones that had, like, the biggest blankets and covered the most area produced the least amount of vitamin D.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because for a long time, people just assumed that the hair over cows or over really any animal really inhibited vitamin D synthesis. You know, it blocks some of those UVB rays, but it looks like obviously animals have found out a way around it and the sun gets through their, you know, their fur.
Yeah, and that's, I've read articles on dogs trying to kind of figure out the same thing because I was wondering, like, how do dogs get vitamin D? You know, being a dog owner myself, and yeah, that's what you kind of read, like, when you come across. So one thing, when I, like, I design their diets, I make sure that they're constantly getting liver to kind of make up for that vitamin D. But I mean, I guess I really don't need to, and it makes sense that I see my dogs, like, sunbathing kind of often, and I'm guessing that's because of the vitamin D and not because they're trying to get a tan, because I don't think that, it works that way with dogs.
Yeah, they could care less what color they are, right? Yeah. You know, I almost pulled like a companion article, I might post on the website too, but about vitamin D, that, you know, most vitamin D supplements come from sheep's wool.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I might, it might be article of the week in a few weeks. I'm not sure. It's a very interesting article itself, but, it's just a trip how, I don't know, effective we are utilizing animals. So the, all of, like, the vitamin D3 supplements you see out there, the vast majority, over 90%, comes from sheep's wool. So it's very interesting stuff.
Okay. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's a pretty renewable resource, you know, like, you're not, you don't need to kill a sheep to get its wool. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. And it's packed full of it for sure. But yeah, so that's article week this week. Very interesting stuff on vitamin D. It's super important. If you want to learn more about vitamin D, we do have a whole podcast on it. So you can just go to the website, search vitamin D. It'll come up, give you all the information you need. But yeah, let's get into part two. Like I said, we just cover more things with the sun. You can find all of Heather's information on the website. So go to tntwellnessandnutrition.com. You can find her website, a link to her book, and any information you might want to reach out to her. Hope you guys enjoy part two.
So one of my favorite quotes from your book was, say no to sunglasses. So a few years ago, I came across a study that was just showing like an increased chances of getting a sunburn while you're wearing sunglasses. But in the mention or in the book, you mentioned that sunglasses actually do a lot more harm than just that. Can you talk about some of those other like benefits that you get from just being having a naked eye instead of like sunglasses?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So first of all, if we just look at sunglasses and what they do to the eye, they basically put a darkness, a shadow over the eye. And so that message just right there is going to stimulate the release of melatonin at the wrong time of day. Melatonin's I'm sure you all are aware of, and for your listeners, it's released from the pineal gland 3 to 4 hours after dark, and this allows us to get sleepy, to heal, to regenerate our cells at night. So if we're getting that melatonin released during the day simply by wearing sunglasses, we're going to totally deplete our melatonin stores. So when nighttime comes, we're not going to be sleepy, we're not going to heal or regenerate at night, and you know, things like insomnia can start to set in. So just, you know, that's a huge thing that can happen just from wearing the sunglasses, because your body, the message you're giving to your body is that it's nighttime, or you're going into nighttime. And the eye is a very interesting place, because what's called the eye clock is located there, and this is a big way that your body, your physiology, tells time. By the way, and the type of light that hits your eye, it sends signals to the retina, to the hypothalamus, that actually allows your body to detect what time of day it is, what season it is, what time of year it is. And this is a huge way that our body tells time, that our metabolism runs, and that our hormones run in this way. So there's a lot of anatomy there that actually hooks into this circadian clock system that we all have, which is located in the eye. And it's called the paraventricular nucleus, for any of the science nerds out there who kind of want to go and look it up. So that's a huge thing that happens when sunlight hits our eye. We're able to tell time, which in turn triggers the release of certain hormones and certain metabolic signals throughout the day. When we put sunglasses over the eyes, then those signals, your body can't receive those signals or that messaging in order to release the chemicals, the hormones, the metabolic signals that our body needs to actually run. So just by wearing sunglasses, you can develop hormonal and metabolic disorders like cancer, like type 2 diabetes, like chronic fatigue, like weight gain, you know, just simply from blocking sunlight's ability to enter the eye and trigger that physiological time clock that's located there.
Yeah, so I'm glad you're here to back up Tom, because I had a conversation with somebody. You mentioned this article when, like a year ago, maybe, with the sunglasses?
A while ago.
It's been a long time, yeah. So I remember a listener came to me and was like, that thing Tom says sounds like bullshit. Like, sunglasses aren't doing that. And I was like, well, I mean, like I've said a million times, like, my arguments are, a lot of them are evolutionary based. I was like, well, when did we ever walk around with dark plastic over our eyes? I was like, never. I was like, you know, there's going to be consequences. But this particular person did not believe me either. So I was like, okay. But having you, someone obviously an expert in the sun, backing it up, that really there are consequences for doing these things.
Yeah, there really are. And if that person's listening,
she probably is. Steph, what's up?
Blasted her out like that.
If that person's listening, there's actually a really great book. It's got a long title. It's like The Influence of Light on man, on the physiology of man. It's by Fritz Hallwich, I believe. I can get that to you for certain, and so you can pop it in your show notes. Yeah. But that is an awesome book with so many scientific references, and one of the studies in there does a study on a bunch of animals and I believe even humans, where they expose the body to sunlight, but they cover the eyes and make them dark. They put a lens over the eyes. And so exactly what you've described here happens is that they don't actually end up, their skin doesn't tan, they don't absorb vitamin D because their light, the light entering their eyes is blocked. And so I think when people start to understand the eye clock and its huge influence on our hormones and our metabolic health, because UV light is absolutely vital for our metabolic and hormone health. And so if we block that with sunglasses, like the study demonstrates, your skin literally can't absorb sunlight. So that's how important the eyes are in the whole process of your body being able to utilize and absorb sunlight.
So it sounds like sunglasses need a warning label.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, they definitely do. But, you know, all the ophthalmologists, dermatologists even, with regard to the skin, they caution people, hey, put your sunglasses on, you don't want to ruin your eyes. And they're literally sending very detrimental information, incorrect information to their patients. And it's because they too are looking in the direction of very biased, heavily funded studies by the industry that's pointing them in the direction to look in a certain way, which is all about sunglasses, because they know if they wear sunglasses that they're going to get more people through their door with eye issues. The same thing's for cataracts. I mean, you can Google this even right now, and you can Google side effects of cataracts, and one of the biggest ones is people who get cataracts have a very high incidence of developing type 2 diabetes. And this is because that UV light is blocked when you put a cataract in. And so you need UV light in order to run your metabolism, in order to have healthy insulin release, etc. So a lot of these things are known. They're just buried in the literature because people aren't looking in that direction, because it's not going to make the big guys in the ophthalmology world, the dermatologists, not going to make them a dime if people, you know, don't come into their office anymore. Unfortunately, that's just how the medical system is currently set up. But there's a lot to light when it comes to your metabolism, to your health, and the implications are out there. It's just, you have to kind of look, you have to put in some effort to look in these other directions.
Yeah. I mean, what you just said now, you just mentioned about how the system's really broken, you know, and there's a bunch of reasons for it. And I just couldn't help but think of when a diabetic patient goes to a doctor and their doctor tells them to eat oatmeal for breakfast because it's a complex carbohydrate, and I want to pull my hair out. I'm like, you don't get it. Like, you're making this disease worse. That's not healthy, but they're making a return customer, and that's sad, but it's just kind of how the system runs nowadays.
Yes. It's absolutely true, which is why the work that you guys are doing is so important, and other people out there are starting to get it. And just the hope is that more and more people listen to podcasts like this and help to see things differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So another part of the book I found really interesting was the topic of sun gazing. So it's something I've never even thought of, but after I read it, I was like, wow, that makes total sense and why it's beneficial. Can you kind of talk about that? Because I don't want to tell people to look directly at the sun.
Yeah, and people listening in, they might be freaked out, like, oh, you know, I don't want to look directly at the sun. I've been told that's bad. And, you know, there is something too, that you don't want to look directly at the sun most times of the day, but there are times of the day which is actually beneficial to look directly at the sun. And so what I tell people who read the Sunlight RX or who are clients of mine, that it's a beneficial thing to look directly at the sun just as it's coming over the horizon during sunrise. For the first 30 seconds to 60 seconds, that's a perfect time to look directly at the sun. And The same thing goes for sunset. You know, as the sun is setting, that's also a really good time to look directly at the sun, especially just as it's setting and going back down the horizon. So that light frequency is predominantly red light. There's a little bit of blue light. There's some other frequencies mixed in, but it's predominantly red light. And red light is a very important light for our energy, our ATP energy production needs at the mitochondrial level. It does other things in the mitochondria, but a huge thing is energy production. And 3.5 billion years ago, humans kind of came into existence, and from that time, we were born to be, our physiology to be optimized to sunlight. So this is kind of this ingenious connection, this primordial connection that sunlight always contains 42% red light, and it's predominant at sunrise, it's predominant at sunset, but it always contains 42% red light. And that's because our cells literally need red light in order to churn out ATP energy. So you get a big whopping dose of that at sunrise and at sunset, and that red light is very, very healing when it enters the eye, when it hits your skin. It's very healing to the cells, to inflammation levels, to any type of joint pain, to any inflammation. Super, super healing. So if you want a sun gaze, which is a really ancient practice, many of the Aztec, many of the Mayan cultures, and many others, the Egyptians, they practiced sun gazing because they literally had more energy, and they noticed this after practicing sun gazing. And so I encourage people to do that, especially for the first several seconds of sunrise and sunset. Really, really awesome health benefits there. One, you can be chronic in your practice and do it especially, you know, over time on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think just something to touch on real quick, how you said humans have been around for billions of years, and, you know, wherever you want to draw the line specifically for Homo sapiens, say whatever, millions of years, mm-hmm. all that time, there's been pretty much one constant, and it's the sun. So when people come around, they're like, stay out of the sun, wear a hat, wear sunscreen. I'm like, man, our bodies know exactly what to do with the sun. It's been there since day one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely true. You nailed it. It's true. Yes. Now we just have to remember and learn how to go out at the correct forms of correct times of day to really, really get the benefits. Because one of you mentioned that you're super pale, and mm-hmm. you know, because people have this. We have this belief that if you're pale skinned, if you're redheaded, freckles, that you're going to get sunburned, so avoid the sun. But that's actually not accurate. Pale people need a lot of sun, because when winter comes in, they're going to deplete their vitamin D levels pretty rapidly. So they have freckles. These are actually pools for vitamin D to actually enter your body. And so this is another ingenious evolution, so to speak, of the human body, that the freckles for these people who are of Irish descent are there for a reason, and that reason is to absorb more UVB light so they can pack it away. So as soon as the sun starts to go away and the late fall and the winter comes in, there's their resource, there's their surplus of vitamin D that's going to last them through the winter months without getting digestive disorders or seasonal affective and insomnia, constipation, etc. So even if you're super pale, if you follow the Sunlight RX and do it in the chronological order, is when the afternoon sun comes in, you'll never burn. You will not burn. The more you're in sunrise light, the less you're apt to burn in afternoon light. And I'm totally Caucasian white skin, you know, and so I've never burned one time since doing the Sunlight RX. And, you know, when I first started, I'm not talking about, you know, 2 minutes out in sunrise light. Because we've been in such a sunlight deficit for much of our lives, we need a lot of sun. We need to reboost and restore that deficit. And so I'm talking for a therapeutic benefit, 30 minutes, an hour out in sunrise light. If you do that, no matter what color skin, what kind of Fitzpatrick type of skin you have, you're not going to burn in afternoon light. And when you don't burn, you absorb and produce more vitamin D, which is a huge goal of being out in sunlight.
Yeah, and I can definitely, I can say she's not lying. I am that guy. I have red hair. I'm very white, rosy cheeks. Like, you know, picture an Irish guy, you're picturing me right now. And and as soon as I changed my diet and exposed myself to more sun in the past probably 5 years than I have the previous 20, whatever, 8 years of my life, and I have not gotten a sunburn. And I actually have, Tom has noticed this a few times with me, that after I've been in the sun for an extended period of time, if I went hiking or just went camping, whatever, I actually can get tan now. So there is, awesome. It's happened to me. I know it's true.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
I love it. Awesome.
Yeah, and while we were talking about kind of skin tones and stuff, can you explain the 6 Fitzpatrick skin types? That's something I've never heard of before.
Yeah, I can kind of do this in a brief way. Basically, the higher you get up in the scale of the Fitzpatrick skin typing, it basically goes the lowest level, you know, at the 1 through 3, that's really pale skin. We're talking about the Irish descent, we're talking about Caucasian skin, and then as you build up towards up the Fitzpatrick scale, you start to get, you know, the darker skin colors until you get to 6, which is basically like, let's take like a Kenyan whose skin is so dark it kind of looks purple, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so basically that scale was created to show who's more susceptible to sunburns, which is the lower levels are more susceptible to sunburns. Well, that's true if you go out at noon and you don't build up your solar callus, so to speak, during the morning sunlight. So for many people, that scale is a little bit misleading because, you know, it says who's more susceptible to sunburns. Well, that's not true if you practice a sunlight RX. However, how I like to use it is that people who are higher on the Fitzpatrick scale. So let's take the 6. So let's take the Kenyan who's living probably at like the 0 degree latitude, like basically right on the equator, where very strong UV light is available the entire year. So that's unlike you guys up in the Bay Area. There's no UVB light where you are right now. There's barely anywhere I live here in Arizona. You have to get below the 28 degree latitude in the winter months to be able to get that UVB light, which is why I like to go to Mexico as often as I can in the winter months. But when it comes to the Fitzpatrick skin typing, so people who have darker skin or a higher Fitzpatrick rating, their skin was designed to be that color so that they didn't burn in those very high, strong UV light environments. So this is why, you know, Africans, depending on your beliefs and what you've read, you know, there's a lot of things that say we all have come from Africa and then kind of migrated away over the years. Well, depends on, you know, what you read and what you believe, etc. But when we started out, if we did start out in Africa with the darker skin, it started to migrate away. And as we started to migrate away, the skin color started to lighten because we weren't in that strong UV light environment anymore. And so we needed a different, basically, engine, a cell to produce energy in a different way, because the sun is basically it's a solar battery. It's a our skin's a solar battery. And so, so the people who have the higher Fitzpatrick skin types, they need a lot of UV light, actually, to be able to support their cellular mitochondrial energy production needs. And this is just skimming the surface here. If you want to go deeper with this and get into the science, there's a lot of good science out there on this. There's a doctor from Philadelphia who really specializes in mitochondrial health in this what's called heteroplasmy, and it really goes into, his name is Dr. Doug Wallace. He goes into the science. If you're not into science, don't listen to him, because you'll be bored in the first 2 minutes. But if you're into it, you know, check his stuff out, because he really goes into the physiology behind this in a pretty deep way. So the darker your skin is, the more UV light you need in order to maintain your energy needs. You know, this is why we see a lot of people, Jamaicans, what's that kid name who just kept winning all the races by a long shot? I mean,
Usain Bolt?
Yes, mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, this kid, if you listen to his interviews, and many people spoke about this, is that he eats absolute garbage. I'm talking about McDonald's, Chicken McNuggets, and all, you know, literally garbage. But he wins every single race. He's training outside. He's really supporting his cellular energy needs, because people with darker skin, their energy needs are built for, I need to run away from this lion. I need to get out of here. Okay, people with lighter skin, they don't have that threat. The threat they have is, I need to stay warm. I need to not freeze to death. So this might sound like it has nothing to do with the Fitzpatrick skin typing, but this is kind of a deeper look at that skin typing, because we all have, basically the skin we have determines our ability to produce energy and how we need to produce energy. So while people with darker skin, they need to run away from things like lions, and, you know, they really needed to be able to do that, their survival really weighed heavily on their ability to do that. So this is why they tend to win. People with a higher Fitzpatrick skin type tend to win all the races. Their engine is literally designed to be able to run very fast away from the lion so they can save their life. Whereas people who are pale and white like you and I, we tend to be slow as shit. And so in order for us to be fast, we have to work really hard and train really hard and eat a really solid diet so that our engine and our energy production needs can even try to meet theirs. It's like it's physiologically almost not possible, unless you're doing something like doping, blood doping or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's really not possible, and it's because white people and people with lighter Fitzpatricks, they need to stay warm. And so there's different energy production needs. We produce energy in a slower way, so to speak, than people with a higher Fitzpatrick. Now, the more sunlight that we get, and this is all Fitzpatrick's, the greater your energy production needs are going to be. So if you're, to answer your question in a very long-winded way, the lighter you are on, and the lower you are on the Fitzpatrick scale, and you can Google it or just read the Sunlight RX to see where you are on that scale, the more you need to be in red light at sunrise so you don't burn in the UVB light that shows up later in the day, and so that you can make vitamin D and have healthy hormones and a healthy metabolism. The higher up you are on the Fitzpatrick scale, yes, you of course need that red light at sunrise, but honestly, you're not going to burn when it comes to the UVB light, and they're still going to be able to absorb that UVB light. Very long-winded answer, I hope, to your question.
No, that was a... Did you ever think of athletes like that? I mean, I never thought of it that way.
No, not until I read the book and like read that part on the book. But yeah, that whole part on the mitochondria and just kind of breaking it down, it does make a lot of sense. It's just not something I ever really like thought of.
No, it's like a completely different perspective to look at that. It's a trip.
But it makes sense from a survival standpoint.
Oh, it does, 100%. Yeah, like I said a million times already, that's how we really think about things. And we are our genetic code. You know what I mean? Like evolution and evolutionary pressure, like it's been around for billions of years. It's shaped us to who we are. So yeah, that makes perfect sense. That's very interesting.
It's fascinating. And an easy way to think about it is, since the if you're being chased by a lion, you need to get a really quick burst of energy.
Get up and go.
So the electrons move across your mitochondria really fast. So your mitochondria are very tight. They're like a sardines packed into a can. Versus somebody who has skin typing like you and I, our mitochondria tend to be, the proteins inside the inner membrane are stretched out a little bit, so it takes a longer time for the proteins to move across there, which allows us to stay warm. We're going to be slow as shit, but we'll be warm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like, in a nutshell, how that works. But I know, it's fascinating. When I learned that, I was like, that would be helpful, you know, for like trainers, for like the CrossFit people. Maybe it would be really helpful for people to know this and how to actually improve their energy production needs just by doing the Sunlight RX. I mean, that could be so basic, but so helpful for people in the athlete world.
Yeah, and I know that's true because we've talked about mitochondria. I swear in every episode we bring up our mitochondria because that's just how important they are. But yeah, people who live near the equator, they do have exactly what she said, tight mitochondria. So the electrons really don't leak out. So they're very efficient at producing energy quick. But mitochondria, people don't really know, they are the like genesis of our body heat. That's why we're warm-blooded creatures, is our mitochondria. And when you're living in whatever, Ireland or Scotland, we really don't know nowadays because we have, you know, we have heaters. We have nice thick jackets, but a couple thousand years ago when it was snowing for 3 months on end, you better hope your mitochondria are leaky or you're going to freeze to death, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. You make a good point. So in order for people with lower Fitzpatrick and lighter skin to maintain their health in the cold months, and to bring their mitochondria closer together, one little biohack or mitohack, however you want to say it, to do, which I'm sure you all are well aware of, is the stuff like the Wim Hof method and getting your body cold can really help with that.
Yeah, I'm reading his book right now, and yeah, it's definitely helpful. And we both have been taking, like, we've been doing cold exposure for a few years now and stuff like that, and you definitely do notice a big difference.
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool.
So one piece of advice that I've often used and recommended to other people to help deal with jet lag is to get sun exposure as early in the day as possible. Is this good advice? And like, what other benefits can you get from the morning sun or the step one of your sunlight prescription?
That's a good question. I think jet lag is a big one because when you fly, and the further away, you know, you fly from wherever you're coming, you know, your starting point is, the bigger kind of knock on the head it is going to be to your circadian biology. So your time clock's going to get thrown out of whack. So one, you're totally nailed it. That one huge way to, or really beneficial way to help bring your circadian biology back into harmony is to get in sunlight. Watching the sunrise is a really, really beneficial thing to do because of the red light present there. It's going to help your cells to produce energy and to ground in, but also literally grounding into the earth away from, meaning your bare feet are planted into the earth, and preferably in nature, away from things like cell towers and stuff, is going to be very helpful, because you want to restore your electrons. When you fly, those electrons, you lose electrons to your environment. So a lot of those electrons are lost and need to be replenished. And so a huge beneficial way to do that is by being in sunrise light, and also by being in, if you're flying to a sunny place, especially being in afternoon light will be very helpful. Something I talk about on my EMF 101 course, there's literally an entire module dedicated to how to recover from air travel, is swimming in the ocean. If you swim in the ocean, you're going to be grounded, you're going to be outside in sunlight, and the salt will help, that's naturally in the ocean, will help your body detox and ground after the air travel. So I think that being in sunrise absolutely will help you ground in and your cells recover and produce energy after air travel. But just being outside in general in as strong of sunlight as you can, if you're going to a sunny place especially, will be super helpful, because then your time clock, your physiological time clock, will start to align with the time clock of the area that you're in. So let's say it's winter time, you know, in the Bay Area right now, and you fly to Florida or Mexico, and, you know, it's the tropics down there, your body will adjust to that time clock, so to speak, simply by being, especially if you're in the UVB light, that strong light, if you build your sunlight RX throughout the day and you're in the afternoon light, then your body's going to get this signal like, oh, wow, it's summertime, there's that UVB light, and that's going to help your body really recover from air travel. I know not everyone's going to be flying to a place where there's UVB light, but when you do, that's probably even, you know, as important as seeing the sunrise, to help your time clock align with the time clock of the area that you're in, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Okay, cool.
Okay, that's the end of part two. Continue listening to next week. Part three is going to be the final part of this series, and we go over every step of Heather's sunlight prescription. So what you need to do exactly as far as when to get in the sun, how long to stay in the sun throughout the day to get all the healing benefits of the sun. So I hope you guys like this podcast. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. Check us out next week. Have a good one.